My name is Scott Jensen. I spent several years at Apple. Then I went to Symbian, where I worked on some mobile operating systems. Was a freelance consultant for a while. Ended up at Google for 6 years as I managed the mobile UX team. And now I'm a creative director at Frog. I published a blog post about 6 months ago that got a little bit of traction. I got here into South by Southwest. It has the very simple and not too exciting title, but Mobile Apps Must Die. And I felt like I needed to talk about it a little bit and explain a little bit more, because so often when I talk about this idea about mobile apps dying, I get this response. It's like, well, Scott, come on. I mean, Instagram, Angry Birds. I mean, native apps are clearly doing very, very well. What am I smoking? How can I possibly be saying that mobile apps must die? So let me make it really clear, okay? I think that native UX on mobile phones is better than WebEx today, okay? So I want to make it very, very clear that I'm not trying to say that native apps are stupid. What I'm trying to say is they're limiting us. It's a paradigm that's stopping us from thinking about the future. That's what I'm trying to do. So let's just talk a little about mobile applications. There's this circle here that will represent everything that, say, native apps can do. Warning, Venn diagram approaching here. Okay, so then there's going to be this circle about what web can do, and there's this intersection about what is good for each. And yes, I'm kind of one of those guys that's slightly in the web camp, so I will admit that. And over time, you know, there's getting more and more. So there's this circle when you're doing something on the web, but people insist on doing it for native. Native has become such a positive, established model that people don't want to do anything else. So as a director at Frog, I'm working with it. I get clients like this all the time. Okay? It's like, I don't want to think. Just give me an app. Okay? But if you could do just, no, just give me an app. Okay? And that's the frustration. That's why I wrote the article. It's this app myopia. It's not that apps aren't okay. They're just not the only tool in the shed, guys. I want to talk about that a little bit. So in many ways, I feel like there's this mathematical concept of a local maximum where we are right now. And right now, all the fanboys are duking it out. You know, like native is rules, web drools, and all that kind of silliness about them fighting. I don't care about native versus web, okay? That's like yesterday's news. I'm interested in that. Where are we going? What's the alternative? Because we just can't be doing this for the rest of our lives. I hope not, you know? So the intention is that what we need to do is take a look at three trends. What's happening right now that kind of gives us an idea of different things happening? So the first trend I want to talk about is app glut. Are we really going to have an app for every store we go into, every website we go to, every product? I mean, at some point, it just gets to be a little bit silly. In many ways, kind of, I would say that the user becomes the bottleneck. Okay, let me just ask you guys. How many guys in the last couple of months have gone through your phone and said, just delete, 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 just delete as many of all that? Right, okay, we're gardening our phones, right? We're kind of like cleaning these things after a while. That's just kind of a little weird. Okay, one more question. Have you guys ever been into a store and there's a sign, we're in the App Store, and you kind of go, I can't be bothered, right? Exactly. I can't be bothered is design gold, okay? It indicates something needs to be solved, okay? And that's kind of what I'm talking about here, because the cardinal rule, the basic upon rule upon everything that UX, I think, is built is value must be greater than pain. So take, for example, the early SMS. The pain of sending an SMS was really, really high, but the value was higher, so it succeeded. It doesn't mean you shouldn't make it better, but it worked, okay? At the same time, the opposite end of the spectrum, so value was more important in that particular case. Take a look at Google, okay? Google had a certain value pain proposition, and they found if they just decreased the load time of the Google load of the Google page by tenths of a second, usage went up. The value was identical, okay? But the pain was reduced. And what's interesting is that so often at South by Southwest or any kind of design conference or anything, people talk about value and pain, but they always focus on value, this cool new thing, this thing. They always talk about the feature. It talks about features. Where UX designers, we tend to talk about pain. We're trying to make things better and easier to use. And there's this tension between it. But what people, I don't think, appreciate is if pain gets low enough, so can value. I kind of call this the triumph of the mundane. Really, really kind of dumb things become a lot more possible if pain gets low enough. So let me go to my next trend, size and cost reduction. I don't think I have to like make the case to you guys that the cost of computing and connectivity is going down. That's kind of a given. So you've got smart TVs, smartphones, smart USB track sticks. You've even got GPS sneakers to give to your Alzheimer's, driven grandmother. You've got Pokin little chips at conferences and RFID chips. There's just going to be a whole range of cheap smart devices. That's coming. In fact, we're starting to design products for this at Frog, and it prompted me to write a blog post about a year ago called The Zombie Apocalypse of Smart Devices. There's going to be so many of these devices that as we get more and more of them, we're not going to have just our laptop anymore. We'll be surrounded by a sea of devices. What does that mean? What are the user patterns for that? I believe that's a very important trend because these are going to put pressure on our ability to interact, which leads me to my third trend, which is these cheap devices are cheap, okay? They don't have a screen on them. They don't have lots of buttons. And so what they tend to do is leverage other platforms. So yes, the Nest and the Whitling Scale all have something on them, but they also have a web page that actually lets you do even more stuff and see more cool stuff. So as we get these cheaper devices, we're going to see these three things work together, which is if we have too many apps, it's going to cause too much pain on the device. If we start having cheaper devices, they're going to leverage other platforms, and we're going to get even more applications possibly on our phone. And it raises a very interesting, I think, kind of inflection point in where we're going. Let me give you a quick example of how this might work. I walk up to a smart poster, and I want to see a preview of the movie. I want to see the next showtime. Or there's a bottle of ketchup in the store. I want to kind of know the platonic ideal of what that ketchup is. Or if I take it home, I know when I bought it, if it has a sensor, how many times I've used it, or when it expires. There's all sorts of ways of interacting with these devices. Or let's say, for example, I go to my tennis court and I want to see the ladder or turn on the lights at night. Or I'm at a bus stop and I want to see when's the next bus coming. Or keep going. I'm at a restaurant and I want to be able to see the menu or turn on the jukebox, or at a mall and I want to see security, and just all these types of interaction that happen in my environment, or a hot dog stand, and right now people tweet about it, but I just kind of want to see when he's going to come back next week, or the car, I want to get in with a Zipcar. All of these are types of interaction that are based around hardware technologies today, and they all are a certain style that I'm calling just-in-time interaction. I walk up to these devices and I want to use them. And if a big sign says, download an app in the App Store, I'm not going to do it. Right? There's no way apps can do this. Okay? And so the idea is about reducing the pain so I can walk up to something, use it, and lose it. And even if the interaction is trivial and the value is fairly mundane, I will do it if the pain is low enough. And that's the idea. If we get pain low enough, we can do this for almost any device around us. In fact, Thomas Kuhn wrote a book in the 60s, The Structure of Scientific Revolutions. I never thought my liberal arts degree would come in handy. And it's a really fascinating story about the cycle of scientific revolution, where we start off with normal science, and we do more experiments, and the model drifts, and we have a crisis because the data doesn't fit. And eventually, we get a revolution in the model, and we change our paradigm, and we try something new. I mean, Galileo is the poster boy of this when he discovered the Jupiter moons. And I feel in many cases, we have exactly the same model crisis today. For the last 40 years, we've had exactly the same model, where we got smaller and smaller devices, cheaper and cheaper things, and it just was the same basic computational model. Of course, the iPad came along and freaked everybody out because now we have multiple devices, but that's a separate conversation. Let's not worry about that. But the basic idea, though, is that we've always had apps. It's been the most fundamental user experience model of I've got to buy an app, I've got to install an app, I've got to launch an app, I've got to use an app, I've got to quit an app, and I have to delete an app. It's like I am garbage collecting my functionality, and that's what computers are supposed to be for, right? So I think we've seen this before. Remember how Yahoo, years ago, back in the 90s, had this fixed set of links where you would navigate through things? And because the web was fixed, right? Okay. Well, as the web kind of exploded, and as the number gets up, the idea of a fixed amount of things becomes kind of silly. And Google said, screw that. Here's a search bar, and just kind of get what you want. And I think we're in a model like that where the idea of fixed amounts of functionality becomes quite silly. So, but it's, by the way, important to realize that Google just didn't index and search. It also ranked, and that's really important. We'll get to that in a second. So let's take a look at these technologies here. What's really important is that here's the four things right now that are in our current phone. And I'm pretty sure that in a very short period of time, there'll be a fifth and a sixth one. Okay? And each one of them is capable of finding dozens, if not hundreds, of things around me. But what I need effectively is something on my phone, a discovery service that looks around and finds them together and then ranks them to say, here's the four things you probably want to take a look at right now. And you can see the next four and the next four and the next four, but it's like, give me what's around me. And in a sense, I feel profoundly that as we go forward over the next 5 and 10 years and we get more and more smart devices, this idea about kind of finding things around me is the next frontier. Right now, Google and Bing find things in kind of the ether space. Here we're trying to find, you know, things in the physical space around us. And I feel that some company will eventually get around to this. And this is, in effect, the next Google, being able to find the world around us. I'm not looking for a needle in a haystack. I'm looking for a needle in a needle stack. Okay, and I need something to help me do this. Now, I've been really vague and very broad in this category right now, so I'll give you some specific examples. Let's assume, by the way, that I have a phone, and if this thing, by the way, is going off my pocket every time I pass something smart, I mean, that may be Vodafone's like vision of the future, but it's not ours, right? This thing should not be beeping in our pocket. Let's take something really simple, like, say, the notification manager on Android. I would just, right now on the notification manager, you pull it down and you see you've got an SMS. That's today, right? Now imagine I was simply sitting at my breakfast table, having breakfast, and instead of that popping down, I pulled down the notification manager and I could see my car in the driveway, my wife's phone, and my stereo system. Now, that would happen natively on the phone. When I click on them, I kind of don't care what happens. Let's say for the sake of argument, it launches a small web page, but it could be any other technology. It launches it and I can start my car. I can turn off my stereo and my wife's phone now becomes her own portable web page and it can do whatever she wants it to do. Okay? Or imagine I'm traveling, I'm in the Louvre, say in Paris. I pull it down and I can see the nearest metro station or I can see the closest bus stop or the crepe vendor in front of me or of course the Louvre itself. These are just samples of what I'm talking about, that I pull the phone out of my pocket, I say, go look, and it says, here's what I found. I think that's a very important model that is maybe aspirational, but something we should be shooting for. So the biggest problem with this idea, and the reason why I'm here, is this idea, let's be really honest, is hopelessly idealistic. Okay? What you need to have is, in effect, a whole slew of phones that are looking around, saying, what's around? What's around? What's around? And a whole bunch of devices kind of going, here I am, here I am, here I am. And if you don't have that ecosystem, you got nothing. Okay? I think that the keynote today at 2 o'clock is an Amber case. We made a really, really good start about maybe seeding this with geolocation information. That would be a really great way to kickstart this. The problem with geolocated objects is that they don't tend to move much, right? So there's a whole other world to play with, but we need to kickstart this in some way. So in a certain sense, we need to create a just-in-time ecosystem. And the first step is for me as a designer to talk about this from the human point of view to say, where do we want to go? And then to engage the community to say, how can we make this happen? In thinking about the future, it's really, really easy to be stuck behind the shadow of what's currently hot and popular right now. Okay? I don't want Apple to hand me the vision of the next 30 years, because if they do, it'll have DRM on it, right? Or it'll be proprietary lock-in, or whatever. It'll be their little ecosystem. In many ways, this is the physical equivalent of the open web. This needs to be an open standard. Everybody needs to play nicely, and we need to, in some ways, crowdsource this innovation. So yes, it's idealistic. Yes, I believe in terraforming at some level. But I do believe that we've got to start talking about this. And in closing, just as the stage was not killed by television, and just as television was not killed by film, I don't believe this just-in-time interaction is going to kill native apps. We'll always have native apps. God love them, right? But I believe we have to have a new vision of how we want interaction to work, where we want to go, and if we don't start talking about it now, we won't get it tomorrow. So I'm here to engage, I'm here to talk. I hope you folks would certainly find me afterwards. Here's my email, here's my Twitter handle. I'd love to keep talking about this. Thank you very much.